You're listening to Dine to Learn More with Trevor and Laura. Dine to Learn More is where we talk about death and bereavement to deepen our understanding of this inevitable part of life.
Okay. Well, Laura, we're finally doing this.
We've
been talking about this for a while, and we finally found the time and opportunity to sit down and talk about some things that we think are really important to talk about. My name is Trevor Josephson, and I'm the manager of clinical programs and services here at the Peace Arch Hospice Society, located in Surrey, British Columbia. And I'm here with Laura.
Yeah, my name's Laura Salimian, and I've been working with the Hospice Society for about 6 months, but before that I was a volunteer for 13 years, and that's how Trevor and I met, because he was one of the counselors that I did training with and even facilitated some programs with.
Right. And we wanted to do this recording for we're thinking it's going to be a podcast, because we want to talk about concerns around death, dying, and bereavement. Why is it, Laura, that you thought it would be a good idea to talk about these topics?
Well, I think people don't talk about it, and that's part of the scariness of when we have to confront death and grief. And it's one thing that's always been in my mind for years. It's one thing that brought me to volunteering and coming to Peace Arch Hospice Society, was because I felt people don't talk about it, and I wanted people to find an easier way through these tough times. And part of it is just being able to talk about it and knowing a bit more about it. And you are a wealth of knowledge on this and experience, and we always have these fascinating conversations, so I thought we should start recording them for others to hear.
Good thing I hit the record button on our recording device then, because I think we can just jump into it then and start talking about these really important issues. Where would you like to begin, Laura?
Well, I think we were maybe going to talk a little bit about belonging and connection, and how that looks like with grief.
Right, yes.
Right? So when I think of grief, I wouldn't actually think about belonging or connection, because it feels isolating and alone. So please explain how this is an association to grief.
Well, I guess what we need to do is to kind of dial it right back and look at what it means to be a human being. Humans are attachment-based animals, which is to say that we're wired to form bonds with one another. And this is done chiefly for survival, but it's also done for a person's personal formation of their identity and their sense of self. In terms of the survival part of it, if we didn't have that kind of internal wiring, that need to connect and to make attachment bonds with other human beings, we probably wouldn't do so well out there in nature. We're going back to the concept of how we evolved as a species, and it was really important that we had those powerful attachment bonds so that we can have each other's backs out there with
right.
all of the dangers that would present themselves. So when we grieve, we actually have to recalibrate our sense of self and how we define ourselves, while also managing the anxiety and the fear that would come up by having an attachment bond suddenly torn away from us.
Right, so essentially we've become untethered, and this end is now kind of whipping around instead of being secured to something, and especially something that we love and have great emotions towards. And so because of this, we feel very lost and out of control. In your experience, what do you think would be the first step forward when you're feeling just so lost?
Yeah, definitely. It can be overwhelming for a person when they're grieving. And it doesn't matter if it's a sudden loss or if it was an expected loss. A person will still have that that attachment bond challenge for themselves. So it really helps that the person engages in self-compassion right at the very beginning. A person might be feeling a lot of these emotions for the first time. They might be trying to sort through the reality of this, accepting what this means for them, trying to figure out what to do next. It could be pretty overwhelming. They might feel like they're in a completely uncharted landscape, one that they've never been in before. Even if they've lost a loved one already in the past or loved ones, each person that we grieve for them uniquely and individually because of the very specific relationship that we had with that person. So even if a person feels that, oh, you know, I've got this, I've had other losses in the past, but why am I struggling so much this time? Why does this feel so different? It's because we do have different relationships with each individual. So most of my clients say that it's the most challenging experience that they've had in life, and that they've never had to face what they're facing now. So it helps if a person can slow things down and lower the bar of expectations and be extra kind to themselves. So self-care is something that a grieving person often neglects, and this leads to an increase in suffering. So what we call this is the need to engage in cocooning. You know, how the butterfly exists in its cocoon. It's safe, and it's going through a very important sort of transformation for itself, right? So you're pulling things in close. A person might have to withdraw from social connections or activities, and listening to what one's inner self is telling them that they need in that moment at that time, and then letting others know what this is so that they can receive the support that they really need for themselves.
Yeah, it's a hard piece to navigate. One way I've always thought of it is that when someone you love is dying or just died, it's like your life button has been paused and you're in the thick of it, all this heaviness. And when you stick your head out of it, nowhere else has life stopped. Everything is just chugging along and everybody's lives are moving forward. And it's harder to step back into life.
That's so true.
I think that's the hardest part, is that the world moves at a pace that is opposite of grief. So we think we're supposed to keep up with everything we normally do, and then it's creating very unreasonable expectations of ourselves. Like, I need to attend this birthday party and I have to get this done. And instead of, like you said, maybe we just pass on everything for a while. And there's also, I think, fear in taking steps back into life because you're missing that significant person. And I have felt, and I know others feel, like by moving forward, it's almost like we're not caring for them as much as we used to, or we don't miss them as much as we used to, which again is a very interesting feeling to connect to these things.
Yeah, you're explaining it so well. We're all so greatly influenced by our society and those around us, our family, friends, and even total strangers. And we don't want to be judged. I mean, that's not a nice feeling, especially when we're going through a very difficult time and we're feeling very raw and very sensitive. So any critical judgment that's directed towards someone who's grieving is just going to be unfair, simply because there is no one right way that a person should be grieving. It's up to that individual person to find out what works for them. And it might be completely different from what works for someone else, but there should be no judgment involved in that. It's completely based on what works for them, and each person will have their own personal way of navigating their loss. No one can claim to know what path that they should take. But, you know, there's these societal influences that can contribute to more difficult grieving experience for people. It's just the facts.
Right. It makes me wonder about how these expectations we've created about grief started. Like, historically, in the past, people had whole mourning periods, whether it was months or years, and everybody respected it and seemed to, in everything I've read, it's always there's understanding. You're allowed to be this way. You're allowed to miss these things. Everyone's okay with it. So looking back, I wonder, like, do you think the wars, the World War One, World War Two, had an effect on how we look at grief? Because in those days, there was no time to mourn. It was life or death every day. You couldn't really just sit out for a few months in your mourning period because you're fighting for your own life. So, and then somehow I feel like this image of strength, of pushing forward, that in the Brits came up with it was their slogan everywhere, like, keep calm and carry on, right? Like,
right.
Just
yeah.
Step forward.
Exactly.
And so I wonder, like, somehow those things, which were very important at that time, are still somehow carried over to today's time, when here in Canada, we're not dealing with war
yeah.
around us, and why shouldn't we be able to? Why isn't it seen as strength by saying, I need time to myself?
Right, yes. The context, I think, changes. I mean, over time, we've had a lot of developments in terms of how we understand our psychological selves, how we understand our spiritual selves. And you're always going to have these influences in the world around us, like you say, the wars, the great wars that have happened at any given time, there's wars taking place somewhere in the world, and that's going to be influencing people. It's really interesting because there was a study done some time ago. I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, so I can't reference it properly, but they had done an assessment of various traumatic and difficult experiences that had happened around the world. For example, the bombings in London during World War II. And they looked at what the records showed and interviews that people who survived those challenging experiences. And they found that people were more community-based. They were more, they came together in a stronger way to help each other, because their very lives were being threatened. So any of the normal things that might be interfering with people forming connections were kind of just put off to the side, right? They weren't being influenced by, well, you know, I'm of a different social class than you, or I go to a different church than you do. All that stuff didn't seem to matter, because everyone was equally faced with the threat of having these bombs drop on
right.
them unexpectedly from above. And of course, that's one example, but I remember this research study referencing other challenging experiences in different places in the world throughout history. And it noted the same similarity of how the people responded. So it kind of suggests that connection and belonging is really a basic human need. And
right.
it does sort of transcend other, superfluous needs that humans have that might be getting in the way. So when times get tough, humans will draw together, pull together. You know, you referencing the wars, and there was the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So I think that definitely will affect the zeitgeist, perhaps, of a community, the general sort of response that people have to death and dying and grief.
Right.
For sure. I can't see how it wouldn't.
Yeah, so the better ties you have can help you, or if you are at least willing to speak out to the ties you have, you
yeah.
are, you know, better off in how you're handling.
For sure, yeah. What we've also noticed is that over time, we've seen the secularization of Western communities. We've seen church attendance is dropping.
Right.
And when we see that happening, we can extrapolate that perhaps people don't have a structure then that they used to have, to a context perhaps, that is in place to help them to experience the death of a loved one, to understand what that might mean for them. That might be based on a belief system, a belief in the afterlife, but also a supportive system, a structure that's in place. So if people don't have something like that, they have to build it for themselves. And you might say that right now in the secularization of our society, we're trying to do that. And I can't help but notice that as the church attendance, if that's what we want to call it, drops over throughout the 60s, 70s, and 80s, we notice the birth of hospice societies. In the early 80s, that's when the hospice societies here across Canada were started and started to grow. And now I can't help but notice that the hospice societies in a way are helping society to provide support when a loved one dies, when normally in the past they might have turned to a belief system or their church congregation or minister to assist them in that.
Well, I mean, in religions it's very laid out. When someone dies, we do this, we follow A, B, we follow this ritual. And I think if you step away from that, you might think, well, I might want to do those things, but I feel I'm not of that religion, so I have to, you feel lost. How are you going to make your own way? So again, like you're saying, having places where people are helping you, guiding you, or giving you some sort of answer to, this is how I would like to move forward and honor that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You explain it really well. And I can't help but think that this really is about connection and belonging too, isn't it?
I mean,
this theme that we are talking about here today, the church, traditional church societies would provide that connection and belonging through the congregation, through the gathering, through the rituals. Without that, we do have to find connection and belonging somewhere else.
Yes.
It's essential. And when I look at all the hospice societies in our local area here, ours certainly provide that connection and belonging through our support groups. I think people are always very surprised when they find out how many different kinds of groups we have. And that's because we want to create those supportive environments for peer support, for people to come together, share their stories, find a way of mapping their meaning and sense of, making sense out of the loss that they're experiencing.
Yeah, well, I love the stories I've heard over time. For example, we have our walking group. So I've even facilitated that group a number of times, and it's lovely. And I love hearing that, as a certain time period ends, those participants now have just created their own group, and they're still meeting, and it's been years and years now, but they found this new connection, and it is very wonderful to see how much people find, because sometimes it is finding people who understand the pain you've been feeling that helps you connect better and feel seen. I feel seen. I feel validated in my loss because you also get it. That's a big deal.
Yeah, shared experience is so powerful. And sometimes these individuals are they come to me and they tell me, my family, my friends, they care about me, they love me, but they just don't understand. And they're saying things to me that are not helpful at all.
Yes.
But when I come to this group, I find people are saying the things that are helpful for me.
Yes.
They seem to understand. And I feel like I can be who I really am. I can express my thoughts, my feelings, and I can feel supported in that. And when we can do that in an open, non-judgmental, supportive environment, that forms powerful connection and that sense of belonging,
yes.
Which again is fundamental to the human experience, to have a sense of belonging. There's a lot of research that has been done indicating that we suffer if we don't have that. And grief is an isolating experience in many
yeah.
ways. People will struggle with that, again, if they don't have a ready-made, purpose-built sort of community to support them in that. They're going to really struggle with increased anxiety, depression, fear of going out in public, perhaps. If
yeah.
they don't feel there's anyone out there that understands them and that accepts them, of course they're going to want to withdraw.
Yeah, and even the time I spent as I went always to our hospice and spent time with the patients and their families, and I found even then that connection needed. There were so many times where I would have a conversation, a lovely and multiple conversations with someone, and I could tell it was they needed to talk things that
mm-hmm.
they couldn't speak to maybe with family and friends, because family and friends are also already starting to grieve them
mm-hmm.
and maybe not treating them the same as they've been treated, and that's all fair and understandable. But that was one of the things that I loved about being able to
right.
go there and be just that space for them to say what they wanted to say or think about and help them find something. And for sometimes it was just, you know, they just to be able to hold a hand,
mm-hmm.
it was huge, you know, or be treated like, I'm not a patient, I'm not in hospice, I'm still me, this person.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so valuable. One of the fundamental philosophies of hospice, of course, is dying with dignity.
Yes.
You know, to allow a person to express themselves in whatever way they need and want to
mm-hmm.
do, and to feel that they are valued, that they are cherished. In the past, we didn't have a place like a hospice where people could be cared for, where they'd have their palliative needs provided for them in a dignified and caring manner. Quite often, you know, the medical, you know, structure was such that we are here to help people, heal people,
right.
Cure them of whatever the illness is. And if they were faced with not being able to cure them, if there was, okay, this person is going to die, we can't stop that, then the attention was drawn away from them and was put towards those patients that were there that were curative. And what happened was there was a neglect of the dying people. So hospices came along to provide that specific palliative care for those individuals. But as Dame Cicely Saunders, who was the founder of the modern hospice movement, established, she had the philosophy of total pain, as she called it. So this is not to only acknowledge the physical pain that a person might be struggling with whatever illness it is that they have, but also the emotional pain that creates,
right.
the psychological pain that comes up for that person, and the spiritual pain as well. So again, the hospice societies have been put in place to provide support for people in all of those needs, which again, you know, traditionally were neglected.
So really, that brings us back to belonging and connection, that hospice was created to keep a sense of belonging to every single person until their end. Like, there is no, oh, we only give you this sense of community
yeah.
until you hit this
yeah.
mark and then we're going to let you go.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're saying everybody is included and
definitely.
We want everyone to feel connected and that they belong.
Definitely. Belonging is essential right up to the moment of death.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, Trevor.
Well, this has been wonderful.
I know. I liked it.
Yeah. and we have lots of other topics that we can discuss here and share with our people out there who want to listen.
Yeah. Yes, we will. So stay tuned, everyone.
Thank you for listening. We hope you found something meaningful from this. For questions or comments, please contact us.